Dublin.
Welcome everyone to Studio Soundtracks, the monthly program that takes listeners behind the scenes of making music for film, television, and video games. I'm your host, Chandler Poling. Today I'm happy to be speaking with two incredible composers in the video game space, Knut Evensten Haugen and Ludwig Forssell. I'm so happy to be speaking with them. We're going to start off with Knut. All right, so starting off this conversation, I have Knut here. And we are going to talk about his acclaimed work on Dune Awakening. Welcome, Knut.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, such a pleasure to have you on the show. So first of all, let's start off by just talking about Dune Awakening. What can you tell me about the story and where players can expect to find themselves in the world of Dune?
Well, the story is an alternate reality. It's not the same reality as the movies. That's the twist. The developers have chosen to remove Paul Atreides from the equation. It's an alternate timeline. It's a time where Paul was never born. So that means they have complete freedom to do whatever they want. Basically, the player can become much more important in that universe than they would be in the universe of the films, of the movies.
Were you a fan of the Dune franchise before joining the game?
I have to say I was pretty green to the whole thing when I started out. It should be said, though, that I started out in 2020, so a year or so before the movies came out, the first movie. So at that time, I only knew the movie, the David Lynch movie from the 80s. And I knew some of the games that had been released throughout the years. I hadn't played them much. I just had kind of, I knew about them. And I had also seen the documentary about the Hodorowski project, the failed Dune project, the film that never was. So I hadn't read the books until I started up, but that was the first thing I did when I became involved. I read the first book to kind of immerse myself in the universe, and of course, with regards to the game, I had long conversations with the developers to understand their vision as well as possible. I saw a lot of concept art. There were some written descriptions and so on. So that's how I got to know the universe. And it was, like I said, I think more than a year later that I saw the first of the movies. And at that point, everyone was, of course, very familiar with the became very familiar with the universe.
Yeah, absolutely. So you said you started in 2020 and, 5 years later the game is out. Is that pretty common as far as being on a game that long, or is it just that it required so much music, or why did you think it took 5 years?
I've been through the same before. It happened also in 2003 when I got involved with Age of Conan. It came out in 2008, so it's a very similar process. Of course, at the time when I got involved, there wasn't that much to do. I developed the concept for the score, the musical language that I felt was appropriate for the score, and I wrote some music. But of course, the workload intensifies, or the amount of work, it grows very much towards the end of the process. So I didn't do nowhere as much in the first year as I did in the last year, obviously. It kind of grows, it expands. So at the time I got involved, there was no game. The game, well, I don't know, maybe just a year ago that I could see anything, that I remember the first time I saw something. It's maybe 18 months ago or something. It was just a person jumping up and down on sand. It was basically nothing there. So it all comes much later. So you work with concept art and oral descriptions and things like that. So and also, the more they know about their specific needs, the more work there is for me to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's very interesting. Obviously, when scoring for film, often you're scoring to picture, not always, of course. So with games, you are just being inspired by concept art, and I'm just curious what an oral description. So what's kind of some descriptions that are given to you or direction in the music, and when you look at the visuals, I'm just curious how conceptually how the music kind of comes together there.
Yeah, so it's not entirely correct that it's only kind of vague oral descriptions or conversations. I do get a list. They commission music for me, and in that list they write down the specific place, what's going on in that place, what the story is, storyline in that place. If it's a safe place, if it's a dangerous place, and of course, I get to see what it looks like, either in the game or as concept art. And usually there are lots of adjectives like dark, scary, ominous is usually used as a word. And well, it could all of those things, threatening, dark, you know. So I have that to relate to. Yeah, I work from there. It's a top-down approach or bottom-up. I don't know which is the best way to say it. But you know, you have something quite vague, and then it gets more and more specific. You start with the atmosphere or the mood, and then you decide. Well, in this case, the tempo was already decided for me because of technical reasons. We decided to do everything in the same tempo and also the same key to be able to combine elements from different places in the game in a seamless way. When you start approaching a specific cue, you have normally the tempo consideration, and then texture and scale, like size. Is it intimate or is it big? Things like that. And yeah, it gets more and more specific. In the beginning of the process, I do the conceptualization, and that's while you choose the different styles that you combine to kind of create your own style, the style for the game, the musical language for the game, and also all the instruments. So you kind of pick from all the different musical styles in the world throughout history, and the same with instruments, and then you have to combine them into something that not only makes sense, but also that sounds natural and inevitable. And then after that, I always write melody. If I can write melody, I write melody. I think it's too much ambient writing nowadays, and I think writing melody is almost like a lost art. And I think there's so much you can tell with melody, and I think there are many missed opportunities for melodic writing. So I always start with creating motifs, musical motifs to represent different factions, places, things like that. And then you have building blocks. If I know that this specific place has relation to this or that faction, I can use the motif that goes with that faction, and then I can build on that, make variations according to the needs of the specific place, and then everything is told through the musical language that has been defined for the game as a whole. So, and also another thing that is important is that when you have this musical concept, the musical language, it's coherent throughout, it's homogeneous. So it should feel like the entire score, if you play all the pieces after one another, it should feel like one long piece of music in different chapters, almost like a symphony with different movements. And if you don't do the conceptualization part well, it will very quickly become fragmented and point in all different directions. So, but w when you have decided all of these things, suddenly many problems have been solved for you already. You have this starting point, the directions that you are given, and I think if it's done well, the preparations, you quite quickly arrive at something that is that makes sense and is usable.
I'm curious what might be some of your favorite musical score moments from the game.
I think there are, or I have, there are things in each piece that I like that is kind of special, and that are the reason why I wrote that piece in that way in the first place. So there are
Okay.
things that I like about all of them. But of course, some pieces came together better than others. And of course, I'm not equally happy with absolutely everything. But it's difficult to choose favorites. I think the moments where I feel I manage to combine the different elements, because I use a lot of orchestra and soloists and synthesizers. And when I feel that I manage to make all of this come together in a good way, that makes me happy. Then I manage to do my job. And if I manage to balance it in a nice way, I put a lot of emphasis on the orchestra. I did that deliberately to make it more organic. But there is always a danger of taking that a bit too far, and then suddenly it sounds old-fashioned.
Okay.
It should sound contemporary, but elegant instead. So there is a balance there. So when I feel that I get that balance right, and I also feel that the synthesizers, maybe they are playing sequences or arpeggios or something like that, and I feel that the synthesizers are supposed is supporting the orchestra, and they blend together well, then I'm very happy about that. And I also recorded all the soloists and orchestra in different studios, so in different acoustic spaces. So recorded in Rome, I recorded in Switzerland in two different studios in Oslo, and of course in London in Air at Air Studios. So it's also a challenge to make all of these different spaces work together to make it all come together in one and feel like they belong in the same space. So
Yeah.
that's yeah. So there are a couple of songs that could very easily fall apart. I was a bit nervous that it wouldn't work. So for example, the track that is now called "Welcome to Arrakis." There are
Yeah.
many different instruments that. Maybe you wouldn't normally put them together, a drum kit and electric bass with the orchestra, and then synthesizers, a kind of melodic synthesizers and arpeggios and all of these things. And I just felt they really came together really nicely. And I was very happy about that. Yeah, I also the melodic lines that I wrote from the cello for the celli, for example, when they come when you hear When I heard them playing live, it elevated what was there in a way that I couldn't have imagined. Because you write something, but in the sequencer, you use your faders and you make it as expressive, and it sounds good. But it's in the end, it's limited and it's just information. But then a live performer or an orchestra plays it, and the intention is that they should play it better. But they don't always do that. But when they do, and they add that human touch to it and the kind of real expressive playing, and it's controlled, it's so elegantly done, then that's fantastic to listen to. So there are a couple of places in The Breath of Shai Hulud or When the Sun is Low, there are some very long cello melodies that I really like. I was really happy when I heard how great they sounded. And the same thing with the singers, for example, Sayadina's Lament, which is a long solo part for vocals. When this was in my sequencer, it did not sound like that. So the Clara who sings it, she transforms those notes into something else. It's like it comes from a different place. It's almost like she's channeling it, and she doesn't follow exactly the duration of the notes, and the lines go a bit across the bar lines, the phrases. It's not exactly where it's supposed to be according to the written music, but then again, the written music, they are just instructions. So she's doing exactly what she's supposed to be doing, but by doing that, she just transforms it into something completely new and something completely different. That is, it's almost like a spiritual experience because you really know where it comes from. It's just suddenly it's alive. So those are the few of a few of the things that I really liked and made me very happy when I heard it.
Wonderful. Well, at the top of the show, I played Welcome to Arrakis, and next I want to play the track Pre-Science. So let's listen to that, and then we'll come back and talk about it. Can you just tell me a little bit about pre-science and how it came about?
It was written as a piece that plays between while you're loading. So and it's kind of something that points forwards to something that might happen. That is kind of the idea, that it's kind of a hint about the future, about what's to come. So there is a theme there that is related to the main storyline, and and it has a sound, let's say a soundscape that is a bit different from other songs, in that it's there is less orchestra focus. It's mostly based on synthesizers. There are lots of arpeggios and sequences going on at the same time. So it's to me, it's like something that's going on in your mind as a player. So that's kind of the idea. It's not the experience of being somewhere. It's what you're thinking while you're not, or while you're waiting for it. So that's kind of the idea.
That's exciting. Well, I have a question for you that I ask of all my guests, and that question is, what was the first album you purchased, and what was the last thing you listened to?
Oh, you mean like today, the last thing today?
The last thing you just listened to today, and what was the first album you went out and bought yourself?
Yeah. This brings us to something that I think is very interesting to talk about, actually, because I think my first album that I bought for myself was probably Jean-Michel Jarre, was Oxygen. So he was one of my first love interests in music. So I started, well, it kind of happened all at the same time. I became interested in music, video games, and movies all around the same time. And the first music that I really liked and that I got into and became a big fan of was synthesizer music, synth music from the 70s, like Jean-Michel Jarre, Vangelis, and Tangerine Dream, and also Giorgio Moroder, who also happened to become a film composer in addition to being a pop music producer. And I've had this interest all this time, but it's the first time I've been able to use this in a commercially available product. So, in a sense, I've gone back to the music that inspired me to become a musician in the first place, and I've been able to use that music in this game.
Amazing.
So for me, that's very, very interesting. So I had kind of a good answer to that question,
Yes.
but with regards to what I listened to last, I don't think it's very interesting. It's probably, let me think. Yeah, I know, because it was my own things. I'm making a playlist for my
Oh,
website,
cool.
so it was my own music.
Awesome. Wonderful. Well, to play some music on our way out, I'm going to be p playing Sayadina's Lament that we talked about earlier in the program. And I just want to thank you so much for joining me on the show. Those listening, you can find Dune Awakening, the soundtrack, on streaming platforms, and some physical will be coming up very soon. And yeah, thank you so much for joining me, Knut.
Thank you for having me.
All right, next up, I am here with the amazing Ludwig Forssell, whose work on Death Stranding 2 is absolutely outstanding. I loved what I have seen and heard from the game so far. Welcome to the show, Ludwig.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Yeah, Death Stranding 2 just came out. Fresh on everybody's mind, getting tons of positive ratings, and it's mesmerizing to watch. I haven't had a chance to physically play it, but I was watching a good chunk of playthrough. And it's so beautiful, and the music is so integrated, in a really clever way. Your original music, of course, and needle drops and everything like that. It's so cinematic, but also a game. I don't know. It's so fun. I would love to hear, in your words, what Death Stranding is about, and then I'll follow up with a question after that. So how would you describe Death Stranding as a story to a listener who might not know?
Yeah, let's just keep it very simple, which is almost impossible for this game. Death Stranding, obviously, we're talking about the sequel, so things have progressed now, and I do hope that people who want to dive into Death Stranding 2 do get a chance to check out the first one, because there's terminology, there's story beats that are going on that sort of expect you to know what happened in the first one. And yeah, it's a really weird world that Hideo Kojima came up with from the ground up. Basically, it's set in a not too distant future in a world where basically humans have lost touch with each other because of these I wouldn't say natural, but I guess supernatural disasters that have happened and have left the world of the living connected with the world of the dead. And connecting directly between those two causes these explosions that, wipe out cities. And that means that basically the entire world is spread out between these small dots, people living in shelters, and you as the player are tasked with connecting these people again. And that was the main plot points of and story points of the first one. And in the second one, we're now sort of asking if we should have connected. Some of the stuff that happened in the first one led to maybe some not great things happening, and now we're trying to figure out what to do going forward. But generally speaking, it's such a Hideo Kojima game and story that you really have to jump into it yourself to get what it's about. And I think even a lot of the actors on it, like Norman Reedus, have come out and explicitly said that, "I don't really know what's going on, but I trust Hideo, and it's cool," or whatever. So, yeah, no, like I spent a good 4 or 5 years working directly with Hideo on the first one, being part of the entire production. So I think I have a pretty good grip on everything that's going on, but I still can't just give you the elevator pitch on this one because it's such a weird world and story, the second one just takes it further.
Yeah, well, I think you did a great job for sure. I feel like I would really love to get into the discussions that are happening about the music in the game because there is such an interweaving of original score and the needle drops, like I said, and then I know there's original Woodkid songs as well. So, what is the musical approach to the game? Is there like a strong directive from up top, or are you given a lot of freedom to kind of make suggestions and write your own style? I just would love to hear that dynamic.
I think I have. I'm in a very special and fortunate position, having worked with Hideo Kojima for such a long time, that I think we're on the same wavelength a lot of the time. And having done the first one and also having been the audio director for the first one, I was able to work and sculpt the entirety of the soundscape for that one and build it from the ground up. And that sort of gives me a background where both Hideo will give me a lot of freedom, but I also sort of know how to approach all of these situations without having, too much oversight and direction going into it. And I think even with the stuff that Woodkid's done for this one, having the legacy of the first one, also giving him some direction as to where to go, we have a lot of cinematics where music goes back and forth in between my music and his, and you really can't tell the difference because it's sort of organically intertwined in a way. And to your point about the needle drops, I get that question a lot. The game also implements a lot of silence, so it I think the most important thing we're trying to do is figure out the dynamics in between everything and have the silence smoothly transition into music and out of it again. But there aren't too many situations where, action music that I wrote would play and go right into a serene song by Low Roar, for example. There's usually good story beats and silence in between, and that was really one of our main goals, is finding the dynamics and balance in between these moments, and making those musical moments impactful by, leaving a bit of room in between those and the normal, so to speak, gameplay moments.
Yeah, that's a great point you bring up, the use of silence, because of course when you're crossing these landscapes, and if it was all just techno music playing the whole time, I'm sure it would get kind of gnawing. But the silence that plays grounds it in a bit of a reality, so to speak. And I think that's a really cool approach. When it comes to your music coming in, is there a favorite moment of yours? Is there like a favorite boss battle or any type of moment in the score that you're like, oh, I love this moment?
Yes, and all of those are spoilers.
Okay.
Most of them are the ones that I would love to like just point to are all towards the end of the game, and we had a lot of fun making musical music that really just are some sort of, I guess in a way, meta moments with connection between what's actually going on in the scenes and the music. I've been watching streams of the game, and it's obviously a pretty big game, so I've actually not gotten to that part with anyone that I'm watching playing through the game, and I'm really looking forward to people's reaction for those moments.
Awesome. All right, well, let's listen to a piece of music from Death Stranding 2. This is a track titled One Last Fight Part 2. Now, is that why'd you pick that track in particular? What do you love about that one?
Okay, so
Without spoiling.
without spoiling, that's the hard one. It's called One Last Fight, so obviously it's not one of the first scenes in the game. This is basically what I was just mentioning, sort of the connection between what's happening in the game and the music itself. And this was early on decided that one of the characters using a guitar was going to have that part of his personality and character be very prominent throughout the game. So writing this piece of music was definitely aimed at that and taking that to a overhyped level. And I just wanted to write something that, made your head go bang bang. And man, I really can't delve into this one without spoiling it, can
That's okay.
I?
Don't worry about it. No, we can come back to that in a couple months when people have played the game. When it comes to scoring for science fiction, is there any sort of challenges or mental hurdles you have to overcome in order to find the perfect sounds you're looking for? Because what I in picture is that as a composer and as a musician and kind of a sound, architect, you probably are thinking of, oh, like this very cinematic or science fiction-y moment, and I would love it if it sounded like this, but then you have to find the sounds. So I'm just curious how the challenges of all that.
I think, generally speaking, as a composer, I never feel like I know what I'm doing to begin with. So each single track that I'm writing, I'm always starting off going like, I don't have the experience to do this. How do I do this? I start from zero. And thankfully, for the first Death Stranding, we had a good, year plus of just figuring shit out. I was buying synths and learning how to use them. So I spent a lot of time to sort of learn how to maneuver these the new hardware that I'd gotten and try to figure out ways to create sounds that I thought I'd never heard before, basically. And a lot of that still lives on in the sequel as well. But I don't think of it as science fiction. I generally just think of it as something where I want to find something that I think sounds cool. And then I guess it's a process of doing things bit by bit and then organically melding that with the world, because originally I thought we'd be more focused on synths only, and this is mostly speaking about the first game, but overall, the sound of Death Stranding was originates from there. But I think through that process, I realized that we needed more human elements. That's where some of the more, I guess you could say, simple types of strings and stuff that I used for the first one, those elements and choirs and stuff like that started coming in. And that's how, I figured out that sound, I think.
I'm curious, what is a tool, hardware or software that you heavily lean on when you create these sounds for a science fiction landscape?
So this hasn't changed from the first game, because I literally brought and bought my Prophet 6 off of Kojima Productions when I left the company to go freelance. And that Prophet 6 is still very heavily featured on Death Stranding 2's soundtrack as well. I also had an Arturia Matrix Brute for the first one that's now been upgraded to a matrix a poly brute that I used quite a bit. Yeah, other than that, I think I was finally able to get a perfect, in my own sense, guitar at the start of last year. And guitars are very, very heavily featured on Death Stranding 2. So I was really happy to finally get a seven string, played a lot around played around with the timbres and tunings and just sound sculpting with the guitars a lot, just to have it not be straight up distortion guitars or heavy metal guitars or just normal clean guitars. So I hope that I tr at least got something that's a bit more interesting than normal guitars for this one. Everything's super layered and tweaked and messed around with. So that's definitely something I felt like is an expansion upon the first soundtrack.
Are you, do you consider yourself a guitarist?
Originally, yes. I would say that I was at about 15% of my original capability during the making of Death Stranding 2. But since I'm going on the live concert tour, the Strands of Harmony tour starting in November this year, I've been practicing again and getting my chops back. And I think I'm at around like 75% right now.
Oh, cool.
But I used to be a guitarist, and went to music high school back in the day, with my main instrument being guitar. But that has gone way to the wayside over, the course of the last 20 years living in Japan. Death Stranding 1 featured about zero guitars, so definitely needed some time to work on my calluses and everything like that just to be able to even play the guitar again.
Cool. Well, let's talk about the tour. I'm very curious to hear about your excitement for it and what people can expect.
Yes. Well, I think one of the questions I get a lot is like, how did you work up the concept about doing this tour and everything? I just got a mail out of the blue from Kojima Productions being like, hey, we're doing a tour with your music and all the other music from Death Stranding. And it was a huge surprise, obviously. And I was so honored and happy that we're going to be able to do something like this. And it's still m very much in the works. I'm working together with Chad, the arranger, who's going to, expand on the synthy stuff from the first one into full orchestra. And I think the second one has a lot more music that's going to be easy to treat for the orchestra. So people can definitely look forward to music from the second one being heavily featured for it. But generally speaking, I'm also really interested in just seeing how music that's originally, well, to a lot of it at least, is originally not very focused on orchestral elements, how that's going to be interpreted into an orchestral, full orchestral setting. And obviously we also have vocalists for the tour, because we're going to do a lot of songs and also, my stuff that features vocals. And all this backed up by a story-based, bit by bit, taking you through the journey, visual experience as well. I'm gonna try as again to play guitar live for most of these shows. Hopefully I get to meet people in person and not make an ass out of myself on the stage, but I definitely wanted to be as much a part of it as possible. And having a bit of a background as a musician, I always love getting on the stage, even though I always get super nervous about it. But li really definitely f from personal standpoint, looking forward to going there in person and connecting with people. And having the story of two 70 plus hour games being told through music and visuals at these concerts. And again, it's still in the works, so I can't tell you exactly how it's gonna all pan out, what's gonna be played and what's gonna not be played or whatnot. Really looking forward to it. So we're starting in Sydney on November 8th, and it's going all the way through to the end of March.
Amazing.
And it's like 19 locations all over the globe. With the game coming out now, I'm expecting that some of the shows that are almost already sold out are gonna sell out pretty quickly. So if this goes out before things sell out, hopefully people still have the time to grab tickets.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that sounds so exciting to have a tour like that and to have the opportunity to perform on stages across the world. I want to play another piece of music from Death Stranding 2. This is a track called Nilvana. What is it about Nirvana that you enjoy? What about this track makes you like it?
One of the things that I really like about this track is its simplicity. It's one of the tracks that really came together. Like, I feel like I wrote it from the start to the end without stopping, almost as if, I was performing the entire track. So while writing it, I wasn't, that impressed with myself, but it's one of the tracks that when we were recording it and everything, people were really like commending on how beautiful it was. And sure, that's a big part to it too. But so this is sort of the light or bright version of the theme for this character Neil, and he has a multifaceted sort of presentation to his theme. And again, we're just listening to the one side of it because it's the one that's beautiful to listen to. But I really love having the dark side to the character and then the light side and bright side, and sort of mixing and matching those, and also how that plays out throughout the game. Obviously, not getting into spoilers, but Nirvana, the character played by Luca Marinelli, is sort of, a throwback to Mads Mikkelsen's character Cliff from the first game. These are not spoilers. Hideo Kojima has been, on stage mentioning this a few times. He's sort of, the new version of that side of the story. He's an enigma, and finding out what he's all about is sort of the interesting side to his character. It's not about like his motivations really. It's just like finding out who he is really the fun side of going through the game and seeing his scenes and interacting with him as a character. And yeah, no, it's just one of those where I feel like the music really directly connects to the character, and they have such a strong bond that I go back to listening to that theme quite a bit.
Cool. Awesome. All right. My next question is a question I ask of all my guests on the show. That question is, what was the first album you purchased, and what was the last thing you listened to?
Oh, I wish you asked me this before the show because I'm struggling now to remember. I think so. This might be a complete lie because I honestly can't remember what my first album was. I remember like all my friends, all of them, like their first album was the soundtrack to The Lion King for some reason. So I can't remember, but I think it might have been the Black Album by Metallica. Somewhere around those, Oh no. It's Americana by Offspring. That's the one.
I love that album.
Really into Pretty Fly for a White Guy. I think it was one of the first covers we did with our band at the time as well. Yeah, that no, we're gonna leave it at that. That's the one. That's
That's a good
the
one.
one. And you know what? I've been on the record saying this before, and I'm not especially proud of it, but I'm not it's fine. I generally don't really listen to music actively. I try to take in the music around me whenever I'm, watching TV or films or playing a game. But in my line of work, I get so fatigued by working on music that I rarely feel like listening to music as a pastime, basically. So the last piece of music I listened to was me listening back to the Death Stranding 2 soundtrack as it was last night, and being like, oh, it's finally out.
Well, good answers. I also I don't consume a lot of music casually because when you work in music, or I listen to a lot of music professionally, of course. So yeah, in my free time, I'm a podcaster, if anything. So I completely understand Not consuming too much music. But anyways, I have to wrap up the show, which is so sad because I love talking to you about obviously all of your incredible work on Death Stranding 2 and whatnot. We're gonna have an outro piece that is gonna be called Soaring Shadow. So everyone stick around for that outro piece. You can now listen to the soundtrack on streaming services. The game is now out on consoles and PC and stuff. So yeah, everybody go check out the game and the music. And thank you so much for joining me on Dublab Radio, Ludwig.
Thank you for having me, Chandler.